Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of Young Hollywood Actors and The Hollywood Parents Guide. Today, my guest on this podcast is renowned Los Angeles acting teacher Scott Sedita, founder of the Scott Sedita Acting Studios. A former talent and casting director, Scott is the author of two books, Scott Sedita's... Hold, I'm going to stop right now. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm not going to do this.
I think you should continue.
Way.
This is very authentic. Keep going. You're doing good.
I love
how you sound, too. I say you keep going.
Well, then we're going to do this.
Yes,
so we're not going to clip this
out. Go ahead. It's good.
All right. Scott is the author of two books, Scott Sedita's Guide to Making It in Hollywood, Three Steps to Success, Three Steps to Failure, and the Eight Characters of Comedy. He's also the creator of the Scott Sedita Actors Audition app. Actors who've studied with Scott include Cameron Monaghan, Holly Taylor, Ross Butler, Haley Bennett, Chase Crawford, Brandon Routh, Josh DeMille, and Charles Milton. Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, hello, welcome. Thank you very much. Happy pilot season.
Happy pilot season.
This is I began my studio 22 years ago this month, and right at the beginning of pilot season. So I was thrown into everything, which was kind of how I like it. You know what I mean?
Well,
you learn as you go.
You told me as we were just sitting down that this is your eighth day of working in a row.
Yeah, it's been busy. I do a lot of different intensives each weekend, so it keeps me busy. But I'm used to that. I've worked since I was 22, so I was an agent in New York City when I was 22. I was just telling somebody that the other day, and they said, you were 22? I said, yeah, I worked right away. I got out of college. After I got out of college, well, I had a job in Hollywood before I left college. I went to Boston University and studied film and acting, and before I left, I had a job in the film industry in Los Angeles, and there was a writers and directors strike, so I ended up having to go home to New York City and live with my mother in a one-bedroom apartment, so I took the first job I could get, which was an assistant agent job. I kind of believe that everyone has different talents, and I have a talent to spot talent, and that became very true and real when I was an assistant agent, because in no time I ended up leaving that smaller agency and going to another agent and becoming an agent. And as I said, I was the youngest agent in New York City at 22. I didn't know very much, but I had a lot of things going on. I loved it, and I believed in people, and the people I believed in worked right away. I discovered Courtney Cox, Matt LeBlanc, Christopher Maloney, Michael Weatherly, Terry Polo. There's a lot of people there.
That's insane.
Yeah. I didn't want anybody older than me. so because I didn't feel comfortable or something, you know, helping someone who like knew, had more knowledge or something than I did. So, but I was good. I was good at what I did. I was really good at what I did, and I just burnt out of it. And I kind of wanted to go back to working with actors in a creative way. I also wanted to write as I did in college. So I gave it all up. I guess around 29 years old, and I moved to Los Angeles, and I got some jobs writing, but in order to survive, my survival job was a casting director, and I worked for a great man named Danny Goleman Casting, who was a huge casting director in that time. He mostly did commercials and infomercials and industrials and that type of stuff, and I went right into doing that. And it was really interesting for me because as an agent, you send people out. You never get to see what they do in the casting room. But as a casting director, I got to see what people actually did in the casting room. I got to see actors and how they, you know, could sabotage themselves in a casting room because either they were unprepared or because fear set in or because they had certain expectations. So it's just interesting to me to see both sides of that. And during that time as a casting director, Danny was so great. I ended up coaching actors during my lunch period. He let me do that, and he lent me his studio at night so I could coach and end up teaching classes there. And then 22 years ago, this month, January 2020, and January 1998, I opened this studio. And I had 10 students. Now we have hundreds, but at that time I had 10 students and there was that saying from Field of Dreams. What was it?
If you build it, they will come.
I know that's corny, but I think I said it to myself every day. And when you invest in yourself, then you work really hard. I used to say I have a horrible boss, me.
Yeah.
So I just taught, and I ended up building the space, getting more space. The interesting thing, though, 22 years ago when I began, my classes were theatrical acting classes. I concentrated on audition technique because that's kind of what I knew. I was an agent. I was a casting director. So it made sense that audition technique would, be something that I would be good at. I didn't do, I wasn't a scene study teacher. But I, when I left Danny Goleman, during that time, and a lot of people don't know this, but even just 10 years ago, the only casting directors that had cameras in the studio were commercial casting directors or industrial casting directors. Theatrical casting directors did not have a camera with the lights and the mic set up. That just hadn't started until maybe 10 years ago, but or even less than that. So when I came over to do a theatrical acting class, I brought my camera and my lights and my mic and my blue backdrop that I had. And so I became like the first theatrical acting coach who had a camera in the studio. And the interesting part about that is that I was ridiculed because a lot of people felt, and I understood, that an actor on camera in the process of learning how to act wasn't a good idea. And I understood that. But as I said, I didn't teach scene study. I taught audition tech. People would say, I mean, the camera's great, but there's no cameras in auditions. So why do you have a camera in your theatrical? I just felt like it was really important for actors to see what they were doing on an audition. Also to see what their essences were reading. Yeah. And honestly, I was just comfortable teaching in front of a camera.
Yeah.
So I think now every acting studio has a camera in the studio. Just recently, we completely upgraded our whole system here at the studio. We've been doing it throughout the years. But so I did, when I first started, I did main scenes, which were dramatic. And they could be, I would either, the actors had to come and pick up the sides.
Mm-hmm. Just then, like in real life.
Like in real life back in the day. And then they had to come to class. Okay. They weren't emailed out because there was nothing there. They were starting to, I got a fax. And so I started to fax them out. But that became a big pain in the ass. So I said, just come and pick up your sides. So, or it was a cold read. But the main scenes were always dramatic. And I always did current TV and film type of stuff because I was a big TV watcher and I loved film. That's what I did on the weekend. So I was able to, through my writing friends, pick up pilots and scripts that were not yet produced. So I used to bring them into class.
Wow.
I remember American Beauty, American Pie, Sex in the City. These weren't even out yet. I would bring them into class. It was fun. This still stands when you come to study at the studio. You do a main scene and then you do what I call a quick bit. That's the last thing you do at the end. It's like a dessert. Mm-hmm. And it's like a one page scene. You might get a partner and you go out and you have 7 minutes to put it all together. And so what I used to do is I used to do comedy. And I realized by doing comedy that a lot of the students didn't really get a chance to do much comedy because nobody was teaching text comedy, not improvisational comedy or sketch comedy, but text comedy. Yeah. So I gave them scenes from pilots, sometimes from friends, but mostly from pilots so they didn't know because I didn't want them to have some preconceived idea. And that is where my whole comedy side has come out in the studio. And that's where the 8 characters of comedy started, was because it was actors who actually helped me, because I saw the things that they were doing when they would do a scene, and it was a comedy scene, and they paraphrased, the rhythm was off, and it didn't work, and everybody looked around and go, why wasn't that funny? When they changed words or dropped words, they'd say, yeah, it's not working. It's because comedy had rhythm, and I knew that from my writing comedy days, and I knew that they had to, there was a certain technique to do it. So I started to form a comedic technique back 22 years ago in my class. And as that progressed, I started making comedy the main scenes as well as drama. And and that's where the 8 characters of comedy started to bloom there, because I saw different actors perform in different characters.
Well, let's jump to that. So that's the title of one of your books, and I found that really intriguing. Can you talk a little more about The Eight Characters of Comedy slash and your book?
Yeah, The Eight Characters of Comedy, as I said, began 22 years ago as actors helped me, kind of write it in this sense, because I could see what they were doing right and what they were doing was and what was wrong. Right. And their mistakes was really is what helps actors figure out what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it began back then, but it was The Eight Characters of Comedy that I started to see. If you put a particular actor who had an essence, let's say that was a little more sarcastic and cynical, had a harder time comedically taking on a character that was hopeful and optimistic and perhaps naive. But if you gave that same cynical, sarcastic actor a role that had that essence in it, they were able to fit it like a glove and the humor would come alive.
Right.
And that's when I started to discover. So I started to write The Eight Characters of Comedy, and that came out in 2004. It came out when there was no comedy on the air, so that's really an odd thing to happen. But it was the writers who really picked up the book first, and they were writing their spec scripts for comedies that weren't on the air. And it was interesting because during that process, as the years went on, 2004, 2005, 2006, 7, 8, those writers who would write me would say, I'm writing my first spec script, I'm using your book, thanks. Or now I'm a story editor, or I got a job as a writer and I'm a story editor now. And all of a sudden, 3 or 4 years later, they were co-executive producers and the start of comedy was coming back. Not that my book had anything to do with it, but I feel like it obviously aided some of those people and kind of helped them. And I think it's the eight specific characters of comedy that writers use and work with. But the book has been out since 2004. It's sold over 250,000 copies.
Wow.
It's translated into Russian. It's going to be into Mandarin and Portuguese. It's helped me travel the world, though I'm not a great traveler. I've gone to Australia, Sweden. I've gone all over Canada. I went to Norway.
Wow.
I always go to Canada now. That's a fun. And I've been all over the United States, really mostly doing The Eight Characters of Comedy. And so the book this is my second edition of the book. It's ready to go have a third edition soon. The second edition came out in 2014. And it's really helped a lot of people, and I'm really proud of that. And the class is still very popular. I do a one-day comedy intensive every month. This month I've done two of them. I'm going to do another one in a couple of weeks just because there's a lot of comedy right now. The pilot season is going to be full of
it.
But this year is going to be a lot of comedy, especially multi-camera comedy, thanks to Chuck Lorre.
That's great.
You know, one of my students has booked the new series regular in the Chuck Lorre pilot.
Oh, that's fantastic. Congratulations. Do you have an overarching philosophy that guides your studio, would you say, or?
An overarching philosophy, yeah. Real, honest, keep it real, keep it honest, and if it's comedy, find the funny. Because I've dealt with camera, mm-hmm. I'm not theatrical, I'm not theater trained in that way, mm-hmm. to make something big, and that's not my thing. So I've always had cameras, so I've always made things ready for TV and film.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I have my own, back when, in 22 years ago, and as I started the studio, so another thing I noticed. The other thing I noticed was that actors didn't have a quick way to take their scripts and you break them down for an audition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it was a play, they understood what to do with that.
Right.
But they didn't have necessarily an idea of how to take, three-page sides and break them down, and that's where I came up with WoFrame, which is my script analysis technique.
Mm.
And that's what I put in my app. I was the first acting coach to have an app. That was about 10 years ago it came out. It was funny because iTunes goes, what's this?
Right,
they had
yeah.
no idea what it was.
What do I do with this?
And they didn't want to accept it. They had to, they were really, oh, yeah, sure. I had to go through a couple of variations of it for them to accept that this was interactive. And this, because they just didn't know what that was.
Wow.
But now it's done very well. It's still a very successful app. It not only has my WoFrame in it, but it has a bunch of other stuff, voice and speech exercises, practice scripts. And I'm already starting to do a new version of it as well.
That is so, so cool. So you've got drama classes, sitcom classes in the studio. Why do you break it down into these two approaches?
Oh, because I have a method of how to do comedy. So, and the method, it's it's hard for an actor to delve deep into the trenches of drama and then the next week do a multi-camera comedy.
Yeah, it's a big gear to
A big gear change, especially when Clashes should be a progression of things, I believe. One week you're tackling this, and then the next week you're tackling something that's close to the last thing, but it takes it to a new level, so actors can grow in that way. As I say, my classes are mostly all audition technique classes. My master comedy class that I teach is for people who have gone through the one-day comedy intensive and who have already taken the ongoing sitcom classes here. Then they get to do my master comedy class, which is, you know, a combination of scene work and audition technique. But my Wednesday and Thursday class, Wednesday is my intermediate audition technique class. That is the kind of... That's my signature class. Mm-hmm. That's the one I've been doing for 22 years.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a very bread and butter class for everybody. You know.
Well, that particular class is an intermediate class. Yeah. We do have classes that are people who are new to that whole audition experience. That class is for people who are starting to audition, who have taken the type of class. I only teach mostly advanced classes. We have teachers here who teach. But Wednesday is open to people, though, who have foundational acting and who've studied and who have managers and agents who are about to get them. But it's my Thursday night class that's it's called the professional class. And those are people who are series regulars, also people who have worked their way up throughout from the studio, from the nuts and bolts class to the scene study class, all the way up to my Wednesday audition technique class. And then they get to go into be invited to the professional class. Because I really feel like it's important for actors to know that they can grow out of studio and get to the higher tier class. And that professional class is a favorite class of mine. That takes all the different TV genres, and every week you get to do something different. Though we do not do multi-camera comedy.
Okay. What's the youngest age of a student that you'll accept?
Well, in the one-day comedy intensive, we do go younger than all our other classes. Our other classes really average the youngest 15, 16. But we do take kids who we feel are... kids who have foundational acting, who have agent managers, who are not new to the business. So we had a 12-year-old yesterday in our class. Wow. And you know what? He was great. He was great. It was great having him. But he's still 12, you know.
Yeah.
He's still 12,
yeah.
And he's an adult class. I think it's a kid who can be in an adult class. But otherwise, I do once in a while the one-day comedy intensive for kids, which I really should do again. I haven't done it in a while. I'll do it with the kids' teacher here. So I do that once in a while, but otherwise it's mostly the one-day comedy intensive that we allow younger kids to.
So it sounds like your studio is mainly aimed at sort of mid-teens into adults.
Yes,
with the occasional exception.
Yes.
But you don't really have striated, like, this is the kids' class.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. No, that is true. We do have people who are interested in the one-day comedy intensive for kids, and we meet with them. We meet with everybody. We're old school that way.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, and we just see if we feel comfortable, and they would feel comfortable in the one-day comedy intensive.
I love that.
Can I tell you about my oddly favorite class?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is a new class, and it's here. I do. I mean, we have 53 people as series regulars. Yes, 53
alumni. Oh my God!
Alumni.
I'm drinking water, everybody, and I just got choked on my water.
No,
when you said 53 series regulars currently.
Yes,
that's insane.
I have been around for 22 years,
yeah,
so I should have some.
Wow!
But I'm very proud of that because people work at my studio, and that's just kind of what if you know about my studio, you know that the people who come to my studio, especially in my classes, are people who work. So it's exciting, or people who are going to work, which is really more exciting to me. So I have this class, but it is once again for 15 and up, called the one day on camera audition intensive. But it covers, and this is the weird part about it, it covers how I have found a method to how to book co-star roles.
Co-star, not
yes.
Guest star,
no,
series regular.
I went out to lunch with a manager who's a good friend of mine, and I love her, and she said, "What the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
why are you doing a co-star class? You're Scott Sedita. You have all these series regulars." Because it's so much fun to watch somebody who's taken this co-star, one-day co-star intensive, so to speak, and you get to do about six or seven of them, so you really get to work a lot. then go out on an audition, a co-star, and book it. And it's their first job. It's like when I was an agent. It's so exciting for somebody to write me back and go, I booked my first job. I am equally excited when someone says they booked a series regular, but I've also seen them book from a co-star to a guest star to a series regular.
Yeah.
So it's a new beginning for somebody. And for me, I'm happy that I could help them with a certain method I have for doing it. And
that
it works.
That is so neat. Yes. You're the only person I've ever heard of who has a co-star.
I know. I started it about 2 or 3 years ago, secretly and quietly. I love it. It's really fun. The next one we're doing is February 23rd, I think. But it's really fun. And it's also, I get to work with these small roles that are so pivotal for a script. It teaches the actor circumstances of a television show and understanding what your purpose is as that co-star role in that TV show.
Yeah.
And it's important. And the acting has to be real. It has to be authentic. It has to be camera ready. And you know what else it has to be? Because there's so many sight lines, you have to know sight lines.
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
Yes. Because the small, you know, they'll go, hey, you have to see something that's not there.
He just pointed at the sky.
Yes.
And probably, maybe the thing is not really supposed to be in the sky.
Yes, exactly. They have to see things that aren't there a lot of them. So I enjoy it. It's fun.
I love it. Well, it's interesting because everybody's always focused on, you know, being the great big star or whatever. But well, how do you get there? Nobody goes from 0 to 60 in one jump.
I know.
Co-stars are the gateway.
It is. See, commercials used to be, you know, you don't get as many commercials anymore. Back in the day, you book a lot of commercials, and the next thing you'd book is a co-star. Mm-hmm. And then from the co-star, the reason the commercials and the co-star work well is because the commercials make you understand what look you have, and then what essence are you bringing forth. In the old commercial, the boy next door, the girl next door, the young mom, the young dad. So it gives you an idea of what kind of essence that you have. Now, the co-star takes the same thing. It takes the look and the essence, but then it starts to filter more acting in. And the acting has to be real. It has to be honest. It can't pull focus from the series regulars. And that's an important thing.
That is a huge thing.
So the next day, you know, the week after, we get these emails going, I booked my first co-star in Criminal Minds or, you know, the Modern Family. I'm like, yeah, good. I feel good. I feel like I helped somebody.
I love that. Well, once you've booked a co-star, it's like you're on the board.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Right?
It is a beginning. Yeah. It's fresh. It's the beginning stages.
Now you're an IMDb.
Yes.
Now you've got something,
a
little peg to hang your hat on. Now your agent
and
your manager,
agent has something.
They have something to send out.
Yes,
that's
a lot of
the
upper agents and managers don't want to deal with them because, you know, they take a lot of time.
Yeah, but they can give you a little bit of a reel, you know, instead of a pretend reel.
Absolutely.
And suddenly they've got something to help shop you with and get you in the door with. That's so exciting. I just love that you're doing that. So you teach a lot of different classes that focus on auditions, but just for the people listening who may not be in LA and able to take classes right now, any hot tips for auditioning? Any quick, like, you know, I know it's ridiculous because you teach.
I would really tell them, to be really honest, I would really tell them to download my Actor Audition app. I know that sounds like a plug, and it is.
But at least you'll see
a script analysis, an easy way, how to take a script and ask the questions that need to be asked, which is, what do I want from the other character? In this case, what do I want from the reader?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want from that other person? And understanding that is the spine of any audition.
That's good.
It's the spine of understanding the story that's being played. The other thing, I'm in the throes of writing my second edition to my book, Scotsy's Guide to Making in Hollywood. So that's a very interesting book.
Let's talk about that because this I want to say subtitle, I guess, is The Three Steps to Success, Three Steps to Failure. And I nosed around in that a little bit, and it looked very interesting, and I would love to have you talk about those
three steps.
First of
all, I'll give you a copy so you have one.
Oh, that would be delightful.
I would have given you earlier. why it's a special book, it's not because of the three steps of success so much, because everybody has their thing. You know, mine is talent, confidence, and perseverance. But it's really about the three steps to failure, because the three steps to success is your want. But with every want, there's an obstacle. And the obstacle for an actor is fear. So the book talks about fear and how it manifests into the three steps of failure. what actors take when it starts to happen. See, actors don't have a blueprint. They don't go to school in the sense of like a lawyer who has to go to 4 years of college and 4 years of law school and then do an internship or a doctor or any of those. They don't have that. So as an artist, you're more sensitive, you're more vulnerable. You should be, because you're an artist. You're supposed to be there in the world picking up and absorbing what the world is putting out, so you as an actor can interpret that and encase that. Mm-hmm. But actors, what happens is that things go wrong, because as every business does, and the starter's rejection or disappointment sets in, fear sets in.
Yeah.
And once fear sets in, then you're on the path of success is taking a detour, and you're on the road to self-sabotage. And it starts very slowly, very slowly. It starts very slowly. And then all of a sudden, it starts to hit. And it's important for actors to realize that, and to realize that how important fear is. You know, when the reason I wrote that book is from the perspective of me being an agent, a casting director, and an acting coach. So that's the perspective of the whole book. But about a few years ago, one of my actors, who I really saw as someone who was going to be successful, started to show up class late, started not to do the work when he did show up. And so I went outside. They were rehearsing or something. I went outside and I went up to him. I said, "So what's going on?" And that when you take my class, you're forced to read that book. And this is the whole reason, because he looked at me and goes, "I'm just self-sabotaging myself."
Wow.
Now, I can't help him necessarily stop self-sabotaging, but at least I pointed out that he understood that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
Because people don't recognize their fear, don't want to admit their fear, don't want to know that they're in their fear. But the only way to deal with fear is first to acknowledge and then walk through it, work through it, do whatever you need to do to work through it. Because it's always going to be there. Yeah. The more you work through your fear, it's like I have no interest whatsoever in jumping out of a plane, you know, one of those skydiving things. Okay, that's not me. But I would imagine if someone was going to do that, first they prepared, you know, took a class or were told how to do it or something like that. But as they're on the edge looking down, I'm sure there must be something that overcomes them, which is a sense of fear like, oh, God, what could happen? What could go wrong here,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But then because they want the joy of being able to do it, because they practiced, they take the leap. And of course, they land on their feet like many do.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what actors have to do each time they walk into an audition, each time that they walk into in their agent's manager's office or a new agent manager's office, each time they send a submission out, each time they get up and do anything that has to do with their career, they have to walk through their fear and do the work.
To me, honestly, acting, it takes profound courage to be an actor.
Mm, I agree.
It really does.
It does.
You know, no less for really young people. I mean, it's like regardless of age, to wake up in the morning, do a bunch of work, preparing for an audition that you know in your bones your odds are not great at getting, and then go out there, give it your very best shot, and get up and do it again the next day, mm-hmm. and again and again and again. Talk about act of faith and courage.
Right.
It's incredible.
Yes. Yeah, you know? I agree with you 100%. It's tough. That's why you got to love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that when people come and study with me, I think that they think I'm very fair and, I guess, funny, because we laugh a lot. It's important, whether it's comedy or drama, that we laugh a lot. But I think they would consider me very firm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to have that. And I think sometimes I like to blow it up a little more than I'm, you know, edgier than I really am. I think it's important for them to know that there is, that the business is a business, and that they can still be creative and still get support and love and still have a laugh and make sure that they have proper structure to be in this business. And with me and the teachers here at the studio, that they have someone who says, this is the business.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happens in this business.
Well, and that creates a sense of actual safety because it is a business.
Right.
It's not just like, oh, I love to perform, therefore right. I should be an actor. It's like, well, that's a piece of it.
Yeah.
It's an important piece.
Yes.
But there's so much more, mm-hmm. you know, which is what you're up to here in the studio, is giving everybody the tools who works with you. What would be your advice? Self-tapes. This is, you know, a variation on my last question, but, you know, self-tapes are a little bit different and they're here to stay and they're more and more. Any hot self-tape advice?
Okay. So last pilot season, well, number one, let me tell you my history of self-tapes.
Yeah.
Because you're talking to somebody who always had a camera in the studio.
You were a pioneer.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you'd call that, but the fact is that self-tapes always were a thing for me. What do I mean by that? Do you know how, I mean, we're talking about 20 years ago, an agent would say, would you put somebody on tape, and a client of mine, I want to see how they're doing, and send it to me. Also, I had a taping facility here, I became the, you know, the person who would put tape, people on tape for New York.
Oh, right.
A lot of the soaps in New York and something like that. So I've always said to my actors, you can always go home, in those days with the VHS tape.
Remember?
Right? So then we would send them home with the DVD, you know. So we were always able to do that so they could see their work and so they could show their work to their agents and managers. So self-taping, the whole idea of what's happening in the business now, is really only in a few years that it's happened. And it's an oddity that's happened. It's not odd to me, and for the actors that have been with my studio to self-tape, because that's a usual thing that they're doing over here. Of course, the audition classes help them in that process, because they're constantly seeing what it should look like on screen through my lens, through my TVs as they're watching. But also because last pilot season, I added to my courses, self-tapes. And so, to be perfectly honest, I really didn't know what I was doing. Here's the script, self-tape at home. I want to see what you're going to bring in.
Oh.
So, yeah, meaning that here's your audition, like I give it to you. I'm giving you 3 or 4 days ahead of time. Work on it, self-tape it, and then bring it in. I have the capability in the studio to put it on the computer and to flash it up on the television. I'm giving all my secrets away. I don't know if I should. But anyway, so what I learned, first of all, I said to myself, this is going to be interesting to watch, you know, 20 people in my class bring these back. But I'm sure the look will be great. I'll still have to work on the acting portion.
Yeah.
Well, I was surprised what was coming down, you know. People weren't necessarily on top of, you know, the look of what the piece needs to look like, and also the sound of it. So I was able to help people and correct them and lead them into ways that was helping them. You know, they're on Amazon. You can buy a light kit for $100.
Yeah.
Okay?
You don't need,
exactly,
like a fancy studio.
Yes, you
studio.
Don't. And so there's just certain angles that the camera needs to be. That are not, you know, that are important for self-tapes. But also, this is the story about self-tapes. So you can mark this day, because I said this last year at this time. This is ever the flow. It's going to change as we go along. It's going to be, actors are going to need to be, unfortunately, able to self-produce.
Mm-hmm.
There was always a thing that actors needed to do about 10 years ago. It's all the self-producing, we got to self-produce, which is a really good thing for actors in general to do, create their own material. But self-taping is a self-producing, which means you got to get a reader who's good, who's not too loud, who's hopefully the right sex, even though that doesn't and shouldn't matter. It will start to matter. If you're doing a love scene, in the old days, you'd go, if you're a guy and you go into, and the casting director's a male, you'd have to do it to him. That's the way it goes. But because things have become so much more sophisticated, you have more opportunities, I fear that the casting world, or the world of who's accepting these self-tapes, are going to want more and more better quality. That's terrible English. Better, but much better quality as it goes down. So the best thing that you could do on a self-tape is make sure the sound isn't tinny, that you have a backdrop that brings the best out of you, and most importantly, that it's chest up to a little, give you a little headroom, and the lighting's good, and then it's all about the acting. It's the first 15 seconds, as I teach my actors. Mm-hmm. What happens in that first 15 seconds? Because now, watching the self-tapes, there's a button, just like when I was a casting director, that you can fast forward.
Yeah, or not even fast forward, just delete next.
Next, yep.
You know, and that's part of why they're becoming so popular, is you can blow through the 100 auditions in an hour.
So I'm so happy you said delete next, because that's what I say, but I want it to be nothing.
Listen, it's a fact. I mean, the way I look at it.
It's the first 15 seconds.
If you have 1,000 people whose tapes you need to blow through in a day, mm-hmm. you know, basically, if it were me, I think it's human nature to want to eliminate as many as possible quickly so you can focus down on the ones that seem promising.
Right.
So anytime you see something that's like, no, you're buying yourself time to focus down on the ones who look interesting.
Right. Right. Well, so you know what you're talking about. I agree. It's a phenomenon that's happening.
Yeah.
So I think I was starting to say that it wasn't until 10 years ago that theatrical casting directors had cameras. It wasn't until about 10 years ago. And it really was just little cameras with whatever lighting was available, fluorescent. So now they're starting to upgrade as they went along. So now all theatrical auditions are on tape.
Yeah.
Very few are not on tape. Unless it's some sort of pre-read with the casting director, that could be. But most of them are on tape. So it's really important for an actor. So funny, I've been talking about this for 22 years, to make sure they understand their sight lines in camera, that they're not looking in camera when they, you know, when they're trying to look at something, that it's not directly into camera, and that they make contact with the reader and have a reader that brings out the best in them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's going to be up to them. My prediction, and this is not necessarily one I want to see, but if the scene is outside and I'm walking and talking at the same time, somebody's going to go outside and do a self-tape with someone filming them walking and talking. And someone's casting director, some producer's going to say, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, wow, that's what I want it to look like.
It's almost like you're talking about production values.
Yes.
At this point.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because at a certain level, it's not fair. It shouldn't
it's
be
not,
right.
It's not.
That things other than the straight up talent and look, or, you know, the appropriateness of an actor for a role are
absolutely
being considered, but they are, because we're all human beings and we're affected by these things.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where I was when I looked at the self-tapes last year, and my first time I did in class, and I would do them all the time. It was an education for me, because I said, this is annoying to listen to because it's so tinny. No one wants to listen to this sound, even though your acting may be good and it might possibly project from the terrible production of it, but your job is to do the best, and you don't need a lot technically to be the best.
No.
As I said, there's just you know, and also friends.
Yeah,
everybody, you know, in New York City, in the old theater, in the old days, because I'm old, so I get to say the old days. In the old days, there was theater. People got together. We traveled. We helped each other. Somebody who has a really good setup for a tape should really say, hey, listen, I will be more than happy to be your reader, and you let me use your self-taping. You know, let's do it together. Let's form a group so we can help each other be readers, so we can help each other be cameramen, so we can do this stuff for each other.
I love that.
It would be much easier for people, and people just have to be willing to put themselves out to help others so they can receive help when they need it.
Well, community.
Yes.
You know, community is important for all of us, but it is very important for actors because it can be a little bit on the isolating side on top of that.
It's Los Angeles.
It's Los Angeles.
Do I really want to go to Santa Monica? Chino Hills? I'm not sure. You know?
That's funny.
But that's what happens. And I understand it. It's part of fear.
Yeah.
It is. It's part of fear. Mm. We let ourselves put things in our way that are not comfortable or pleasurable to stop ourselves from having a career.
Yeah.
And if you can kind of get your work ethic over that and just do it. See, parents know it. There's so many parents who will drive their kids for a freaking hour into an audition.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And on a continual basis, and do whatever they need because they're adults and they understand what needs to be done. But a lot of actors, especially young actors, don't realize if they can look back. You know, I've had so many actors who are older actors who started when they were older, and they've read the Making in Hollywood book, and they said, "Oh, if I just had this book when I was 21 years old," because you're talking about all the stuff of fear that we encounter. And of course you encounter it because you're artists. Yeah. You're supposed to be vulnerable and sensitive. You're supposed to be that. And of course, everything hurts more.
If you're going to be a fine artist, you're going to feel those feelings. And yes. Then you have to develop the tools to deal with them. I just want to say, I really love your whole perspective in so many different ways. But I love the sort of honesty of using taping as a really good tool to help an actor, you know, see themselves, become better. I always thought that that's part of why my daughter Dove did so well so quickly, mm-hmm. was she sort of mercilessly, aggressively watched herself on tape. She had me tape everything she did. And she would watch it like a football player watches playbacks of their own games.
Are you a stage mom?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. How old is your daughter now?
You haven't been reading my emails. Your assistant's been reading my emails.
Erin, I said to you, I've been working. Yeah, I have no time. I haven't done anything.
Yeah, so my daughter's 24 now. We came here almost 10 years ago when she was 14. And she's won an Emmy, and she's doing pretty well now.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
How terrific. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So we've learned a few things.
Well, she had a mother like you. That's what I was just saying. You know, she had somebody standing in her corner for her and watching over what was going on. And that needs to be. You know what I used to tell my when I give speeches at some stuff that have kids on it, I would say, "Mom, you need to read the book. If the kids are too young to read the book, but you need to read the book because you need to see what's going to happen to them if they do get success or if they don't get it right away." So you have to make choices with that. And it's important for you to see that it is a career. It is a business and it takes time.
It takes time. Like any other career, you'd never in a million years think, "Oh, you know, I want to be a lawyer tomorrow," or "I want to be a professional football player tomorrow," and then step out on the field. It's like, you don't get to do that. You don't get to do that with acting either. What would be your advice for a young person who's not in a major market right now, not near New York or LA?
Well, they get the
this
best thing ever.
What do they do?
It's the best thing ever. This is the best time ever to be somebody who lives in the mid-America. Number one, wherever you live, and as hard as this thing may be, you need to get into acting class. And I realize a lot of schools are closing down their music and drama departments, which is just terrible. So whatever possibility that you can give your kid to just explore in acting class, in improv class, anything they can possibly do. Then you have this great opportunity that so many actors before you didn't have. And once again, it comes back to two words, self-tape.
Yeah.
Find TV shows. If you have kids of the age of the Goldbergs or Modern Family at the beginning stages in 2008 when comedy started coming back, go watch them on Netflix or go watch them in syndication and record them from your iPhone and then translate them for the young kids and then put the kid on tape using that same dialogue and be the reader. You can look at Modern Family from the first 2 years and you have ages of all kids. Because they started at like 10, 12, 13, around those ages.
Yep, yep.
So that would be great. I think even Luke was maybe 8, not 10. I'm not sure. My point, it probably was.
Well, and Lily, I think, was like 4.
Exactly. So, but even the three kids, Luke and Haley and Alex, those were three great ages. So the parent can transcribe it, mm-hmm. have the kid work on it, and they can be the reader. And they can put it on tape, and they can find agents. The you know, back in the day, we only had a little book that had agents. Now you can go online, see if the agent or manager is legit. You can go at IMDb. You can see all the legitimacy. There shouldn't be any more like, "Oh, I don't know if they're good or not." Go and check.
IMDb Pro is your personal gold mine, and it's worth every, the first month is free. I mean, my goodness, there's no excuse.
Finding managers and agents who are kids or young adult managers and agents. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's ways now to be able to do that. And people are looking, find if they have take submissions. And people realize that they're kids from all over the country. I also think that way back when there were a lot more of those expos for kids. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And now there is, whether I think some of them were legit, some of them weren't. I don't know. I'm saying, but I don't think there's many of them anymore, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But what I mean by that is that you don't have that opportunity anymore if they're one of the legit ones were in. So self-tape is once again an opportunity.
Yeah.
You can do it all in your own time. You can do take after take after take after take until you find it's a good take.
Which will help you get better and better. And
yes.
Also, you know, remind you that there's no excuse for turning in something that's second rate, because everybody who looks at your tape knows you had time to put it together.
Right.
So do your best.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting now. This pilot season, I think a lot more self-tapes are going to be happening. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you know. I've already done about coached four people on pilots. And three were going in, and one was self-tape. But I'm doing one right after I do you at 1 o'clock.
As we wrap here. Anything else you'd like to share, Scott?
No. I think that if you want it, and you that it's important for the actor to say to themselves, what is it that I want? And that every day you have to get up and ignite that want. I want to be a successful actor. How do I go about doing that? How do I do that every day? How do I invest in myself like I invested in myself 22 years ago with just 10 students to open up a studio in a beautiful location like Larchmont, which was way more expensive than I could do. But I believed in myself, and I believed that people would come. And I believe that if you believe in yourself and you work at it, I mean work at it, finding ways to work at it, it will happen. And the reason I know that is because I've seen a lot of actors who just booked their first co-star role and then all the way went to the series regular and are now all big, huge actors as well.
Thank you so much, Scott. Can you tell everybody how they can find you?
What am I? ScottSeditaActing.com. That's where I am, scottsedidacting.com. I'm also Instagram at Scott Sedita. No, Instagram at Sedita Studios. See, I know nothing. And Facebook at Scott Sedita and Twitter at Scott Sedita. But scottsedidacting.com is where they can find me. Thank you so much. It was really great.
Thank you, Scott. I hope I was helpful. You were great. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoy this podcast, take a second and subscribe. Go to BonnieJWallace.com, sign up at the bottom of the homepage, and you'll get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. If you're a young actor or just curious about how your favorite actors got their start, buy my new book, Young Hollywood Actors, on Amazon. And if you're the parent of a young actor, you can get the Hollywood Parents Guide on Amazon, too. Finally, for one-on-one coaching, invest in a consultation session with me over phone, Skype, or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. In 60 or 90 minutes, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.